And Dire Straits there, one of my faves of all time right there. I want my MTV. And if you are like many that just sleep through the show sometimes because you're not so nocturnal or you have work the next morning and you do the 9 to 5, well, you might be singing, I want my Coast to Coast AM. Well, and guess what? You can get it for just 15 cents a day. You can get all the podcasts, the downloads, everything archived, all sorts of neat little things that only Coast insiders can get. And it's only 15 cents a day. So to sign up, go to coasttocoastam.com, and you can learn all about it. So you can also learn all about what's going on with Kecksburg and the fifth new theory that we have here. We're talking with John Ventry of MUFON, and also one of the eyewitnesses that has researched it ever since that day that he saw it, Owen Eichler, and we are going to be asking them some more questions, and so are you, because we're taking your phone calls here next on Coast to Coast AM. We are back, and we are taking your questions here on Coast to Coast AM this hour. I'm Connie Willis, and we are talking with John Ventry of Pennsylvania's MUFON. He's the director of that, and we're also talking to Owen Eichler, who was an eyewitness to the Kecksburg incident, and he has researched it ever since, and he's got this fantastic theory he's telling us. And Owen, if I can ask you, I don't know how you asked this, but I'm just going to straight out ask you a couple things. Do you feel threatened with this theory? And also, do you have any intelligence background yourself?
No, I do not have any intelligence background. I do have an inactive top secret security clearance when I worked for the Navy. And so I try to respect that top secret clearance. As far as feeling threatened, for years I did. However, when we uncovered some recent documents of things being declassified, I felt a lot more freer to talk about this. So it's not as bad as it was, although I'm still a little leery.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I can understand that from some of the things that happened before. John, before we take some phone calls, I want you to put on your MUFON hat again. I want you, if you could, to question the theories with Owen, if you could do that.
Okay.
You ready for that? Can you do that? Okay.
Yeah, I'll be like a politician. I'll play devil's advocate. I'll spin my hat around, and I'll put my MUFON hat now, which is made of... It's made of Velostat, not tin foil, by the way, because Velostat works.
You guys are ganging up on me.
No, I'm not. I'm here to listen. Let's do your thing, MUFON guy, to Owen.
Let's recap this now. So if I'm pro-UFO, right, I'm going to say, what does Owen have on this? We know we had an errant launch that was 39
and what and tell me what straight out just in one sentence what is his exact theory.
His theory is that one of these GE Mark II reentry vehicles went out of control and crashed in Kecksburg, and we know that it was controllable, and I'll hit on those in a second here.
Okay, go ahead.
So, what we have is that we have an errant launch that we know went up 39 hours earlier. We know that the GE Mark II was maneuverable, was able to make turns and slow down. Witnesses said that it glowed green. We know it had a copper base to it that would have glowed green. The first witness, Frances Kalp, that called it into John Murphy's radio station, said she saw four points of light. The object, the GE Mark II, had four control jets on it that would have been blasting to try to slow it down and control it. So it absolutely matches up with the first witness that called it into the radio show. People said it looked a burnt orange. Well, that's what stainless steel would look like if it was on fire coming through the atmosphere. People asked, why is there no debris field? Well, this was a solid capsule. There would be no debris. It was just like throwing a baseball. It just landed. The size has been said to be somewhere 6, 8 to 10 feet, but witnesses also said that it looked like it was the size of two suitcases. The Jerry Bettis drawing absolutely 100% matches up to this GE Mark II. We know that the Project Blue Book lied when they said there were only three officers sent, because there were multiple witnesses that said there were 25 to 30 people on the scene, Army, Air Force, and NASA. We know that four NASA agents in radiation suits walked into the woods with a box and carried something out, and this object had a radioactive power source. And they had to get that out of there. They could not drive that down Route 31 through Kecksburg to the Turnpike or Route 30 if it's leaking radioactive material. They would have had to tear up the whole road to get that radioactive material out of there, like they did on the Cash Landrum case in 1980. They replaced the blacktop. So that's why they went in there and got that. So those are the points that Owen hits on correctly. So now what I would ask him is, witnesses said that there was a blue arcing light. Does radioactive or nuclear material arc blue? Owen.
In the quantities that would have been used in the RTG, or radioactive thermal generator, it has been known that radium will glow blue in the dark. But
okay,
you'd have to have a high concentration of it, and there wouldn't have been that much in that canister, and the canister would have covered it up. Now, the blue light you had referred to before, that you had mentioned it was arcing blue in the woods. Our thinking is that there might have been somebody there ahead of time, or part of the crew that showed up to remove the generator might have been using a torch, a cutting torch. And obviously that would have put out some blue sparks as well. So I can't necessarily back up and justify the blue lights. Not only that, we do know there were people around the area with flashlights. There was a lot of things going on. We just don't have enough witnesses telling us enough information about the blue lights to try to pin it down.
How about the electrical system in the capsule? Could that have been arcing blue?
That's very possible. There could have been a short circuit of some sort, and it could have carried. Again, we don't know even the time of night that those witnesses said they saw that blue arcing light. So it's hard to tell how far away from it they were or how intense the light would be. There's just not enough evidence or details to make a qualified judgment at all.
Okay, so the blue arcing is 50-50, maybe explainable, either the radium, the electrical system, or a cutting torch to get the generator out of it. Okay, how about the symbols? What we have is a couple of witnesses said there were hieroglyphic symbols around the base. What we have is they had to put some sort of identifying markers around that base. That base is also coupled to the Atlas rocket right there, so there would be some sort of scratching, whatever took place. Plus, it came down on fire, crashing through the trees and hitting the ground. Does that explain the Egyptian hieroglyphic symbols?
The only thing that explains to me that I have confidence in is some type of marking by the military, so that they could positively identify what they had on their hands before they went in there and looked at it.
Okay.
Yeah, you explained that pretty well to me earlier, too. I thought that was pretty interesting, the way you said that maybe people have their own, you know, they have their own code book about that. That's pretty interesting.
Okay. Now, we also have a statement by Nick Johnson of NASA, who said nothing else came down that day. I guess that statement in itself is an oxymoron, because we know this came down that day, whether it was a meteor, a UFO, a GE Bark II. He says nothing else came down other than Cosmos 96 13 hours earlier. So, you know, can you believe NASA? Does NASA give you a straight answer? Never a straight answer, which is a NASA acronym.
Yes, it is.
You really never get one. Even That's... their own guy, James Oberg, says they might have lied.
That's right. You're...
And really, there's two last points on this. One is the deathbed confession of the clay bricks being delivered to Wright-Patterson and seeing a body on a gurney. How would you explain that description, Owen?
I really don't have any explanation for that. That testimony is so far out there. I can't even address it. To tell you the truth.
Yeah.
The only thing I can say about this, you mentioned before about, and we saw it in Stan Gordon's documentary about there being a body laying on a gurney with a hand sticking out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With the three fingers. Yeah.
Right. Well, at the same time, though, you had mentioned they were using a ceramic block to encase this thing. That's what was on Stan's documentary.
Yeah.
And I know from my experience working in the nuclear industry, that's bona fide. They definitely would have used a particular type of block to protect and screen people from radiation. That's all I can say about that. I can't qualify anything about a three-fingered hand at all.
Well, we also do know from other cases that, Hangar 18 in Wright-Patterson was the location. It was not Area 51 that a crash and retrieval would be brought to. So do we know that this creature, that this guy says he saw, was actually from this crash, or could it have been from some other crash? Because there were numerous instances of
that's interesting
brought there, right? Plus, there's
wow.
no confirmation of what this guy says. It's his saying it with zero confirmation of another witness. And really, the only last thing, and that's why I say I think no Owens got this 95% explained. The last thing is, Owen, do you think we will get a confirmation from NASA or the Air Force? Because they could blow this whole theory out, or they could say this is it.
I would welcome them to blow this theory out. At least they'd say something.
I like your confidence in that. I really do. I mean, I like that. I'm looking forward to hearing what Stan Gordon's going to say, and Leslie King and some of the other ones that also researched this. And I really appreciate you coming to us with this, Owen and John. I really do appreciate that. We have a ton of phone calls, so I want to get to some of those.
Connie, let me make one last point on the NASA confirmation.
Sure, go ahead. Go ahead.
And then you can go to questions. They were sued by the Sci-Fi Channel. They claim the box was lost and they turned over everything that they had. I don't believe at this point that NASA can now come out and say this was it or not it, because I think that violates the lawsuit and they're saying they don't have any evidence. So I really don't think they can come out and confirm or deny this.
Who's
can go to questions?
Who Sci-Fi sued NASA.
Yeah, Leslie King and the Sci-Fi Channel. Sci-Fi Channel is the one that backed that lawsuit.
Oh, I got you. That's right. Oh, okay, yeah. I got you. Okay, yeah. Wow. Oh, well, it's all interesting. Let's see what happens next. Well, let's head to the phones here. We've got wild card line number one, John from Grand Island, New York. John, say hi to John and Owen.
Hello, John.
It's a pleasure and honor. Owen, I think you solved the problem, the mystery. I'm standing right now in the same place I was in 1965, and I saw it go by. Me and two friends, one's deceased, Owen's a pilot now, but I saw it go by. I've never heard anyone describe what I saw exactly to the T like you just did. It was perfect. The question, though, I had was I seem to remember a sizzling when it went by. I to this day I can't. I mean, it was 50 years ago. I'm 62 years old. I was 12 then. I was just wondering if you heard that too, a sizzling when it went by. It was green, and it had a little yellowish to it, but it seemed to be sizzling. The sound.
John, you're not the only person that has mentioned that sizzling. I've read that in many, many parts of my research. I believe that when we saw it, no, there was no sizzling. But that makes sense, because from the time that you would have seen it to the time I saw it, I believe enough of the coating on the vehicle would have been burnt off. And for the listeners, that the coating after the front blunt end of the object, the stainless steel cone portion in the rear was copper cladded, and then on top the copper cladding was platinum. And so at the time that you had seen it and heard it, it's very possible that the last remnants of those coatings and claddings were burning off.
Oh, great question.
Thank you very much. It was going straight as an arrow, too, what we saw, too, by the way. It just, there was nothing about it that moved up or down. So, thank you very much.
And before you go, you still there, John?
Yes, he is.
Yes.
It's very interesting to note that the blunt end of that object wasn't just a convex surface. It actually acted as an aerodynamic wing. Circular as it was, it acted as an aerodynamic wing. And with the right pitch, you could have enough air rushing over the top and over the bottom to act like a wing, and that's what made it fly level and horizontal.
Wow. It's fascinating. After 50 years, I finally know what it is. I think you got it nailed.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for taking my call, Connie.
You're welcome. Cheers and a toast on that one. He sounds very excited. So, and another witness, just as you are. We got more phone calls coming in. We're going to try to take this one really, really quickly here. John, east of the Rockies, we may end up cutting you off to go into commercial break, but let's give it a shot. Another John. John, east of the Rockies, Asheville, North Carolina. Hey, John, what's your question?
Hi, good morning. Bear with me here. With us over the years, ever since the beginning of time, we've been, experimenting with new types of energy. When I think of aliens and UFO technology, I think of them as thousands of years ahead of us. Why would they still be using nuclear technology? That would be, like us going back and finding ways for steam-powered engines. You know what I'm saying?
I would like to answer that.
Thank you, John. We'll go into the break with your answer on that. Thank you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. What I wanted to say was that is exactly right, because the MK2 reentry vehicle was a dinosaur by our standards. Why would we ever think an alien power would come down here with something like that?
And it was as simple as that. Yeah, I was thinking he was saying more like, hey, this is a UFO, but he's actually saying, of course, what you're saying is right. Because if we went with a UFO, it would be too archaic. Am I right about that?
Yes.
Thank you. Did we lose the other John?
No, Ventry's still here.
All right, Ventry. Don't add yet. We got to go into break, but we'll be right back. We've got many more people with questions to ask you guys, so hang in there and enjoy some of the music in the meantime. But we'll be back with more with Owen Eichler, John Ventry. Kecksburg Incident, theory number 5 here on Coast to Coast AM. And the most listened to overnight radio program in North America, it's Coast to Coast AM. Oh, hello there. I'm Connie Willis. I feel bad for John out of Asheville, North Carolina. He gave us a quick question. We gave him a quick answer. It was quick enough to where I was like, what? That was it? And John, if you do have another question, give us a call. See if you can't get through on that. You're bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and ready to go. And sorry I had to go on a break. And I just want to remind everybody else, last segment here on Coast to Coast AM. Talking with John Ventry of MUFON and also Owen Eichler, eyewitness of Kecksburg, and his theory number 5 on what the Kecksburg incident was all about. We're taking your questions last segment. Hang on the line right now to talk with us here on Coast to Coast AM. It's Coast to Coast AM with myself, Connie Willis, in our last segment, taking your questions. The Kecksburg event, we've got Owen Eichler, eyewitness, and his theory, and we have John Ventry, Pennsylvania director, MUFON, and we have more questions here. We're going to go right to them. West of the Rockies, Howard, Vancouver, Washington. Howard, how are you tonight? Thanks for hanging in there.
Hello, Connie. Good to talk to you.
Thank you.
I have a much more esoteric theory myself. I guess you could call it theory number 6.
Okay.
First, I'd like to address Owen's theory about the reentry vehicle he's talking about. As I recall, that was right about in the middle of the Gemini program. And at that time, they were using the ablative heat shields like he's talking about. And when they went to reenter, they had to line the capsule up precisely and fire their retro rockets above the atmosphere. And once it was in the atmosphere, they had to bleed off speed until they could deploy a drag chute, and then finally their main chutes, and they would bring the thing down to the ocean intact. And what he's describing here, first of all, I have a hard time believing that you could turn a vehicle at those kind of velocities. It would simply tumble out of control. And it, if it didn't have some means of slowing itself down, it would simply bury itself in the ground like a meteor. Now, I can appreciate the explanation, but I have problems with it. Now, getting on to my own more esoteric theory, I just simply can't overlook the fact that the descriptions of that craft have a strong resemblance to what was described in the ancient Vedic scriptures. You know, they called them Vimanas. Now, I don't know how they travel through time. If I knew that, I would probably go back to the 50s where I belong. But I would just like to know what you say about that. Thank you.
Let me just mention on the Vimana. The Vimana looked nothing like the Jerry Bedders drawing. The Jerry Bedders drawing was a capsule that looks exactly like the GE Mark II. A Vimana did not look any way in that shape at all. So, and as far as the speed, it was coming down very slowly. And, oh, and you saw it. How fast do you think it was coming down?
Well, I want to address that, and I also want to address the gentleman's question on the tumbling. You have a very good point. Now, the design of the MK2 was just fantastic, the thought they put into it. Please picture this. The cone end of that would be in the rear of the vehicle as it was approaching the atmosphere. And when it came through the atmosphere, you are correct, the rockets that are used to steer it are only used in space. They did deploy the rockets at the last minute of the landing to try to help slow the vehicle down even more, but they weren't made to do that. But that's what the eyewitness saw. But as far as the tumbling goes, that vehicle was made so it could not tumble. The reason why is the cone end in the back, if it decided to change its pitch or its yaw or its roll, that cone would always be kept straight as it goes through the atmosphere. It could never tumble. That's what the beauty of that design was. Did I explain that?
Yes, that's a good theory.
It was actually the first Segway. It would not tip over.
Okay.
What do you think of that, Howard? Does that help you out, or?
Well, I really like the Vimana idea myself, but
I like the UFO myself too, and the alien and the arm and the hand and the three fingers. You know,
I would say, Connie, go back and look at the Mahabharata and see what a Vimana looked like.
Yeah, what is it? Can you describe that to me?
Well, real quickly, this is a 3,000-year-old text that was written. That goes back actually 6,000 years, that describes a nuclear war that took place in Mohenjo-Daro, India, which is now Pakistan. But there were these craft that would fly, and they just didn't look like this shape at all. And there were pictures of it. There were actual engineers that took it and recreated them and what they looked like. And they were very wide and long and... you know, this actually nuclear exchange, and you could find the bodies there in Mohenjo-Daro are 50 times more radioactive than they should be, and the sand has vitrified. The first nuclear, and Oppenheimer even said, the first nuclear detonation took place in Mohenjo-Daro, not in White Sands.
Well, Howard, thank you so much for that question. You got these guys going, and hope you have a good evening, and hope you can think on that a little bit more and maybe feel a little better about it. I definitely like I like you got your answers, and we've got more questions here. Hold on. I'm trying to get them all in, but there's no way. There's just too many of them. But let's head out to first-time caller Mike, Colorado Springs. Hi there, Mike. Thanks for joining the show. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Oh, okay. This is Mike. Anyway,
hi, Mike.
Doctor, Eichler, I presume?
No, not doctor. No, sir.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Okay, I thought you might have a doctor, but you have a lab security, top secret security clearance, so that was your diagnosis of the ventricular reentry vehicle, which was it's uncertain as to whether it ever was deployed, but it was supposed to have been lens-shaped, that is, this way. And to have flown over the Soviet Union. It was loaded with, it had nuclear warheads, and it was, of course, above top secret, and it was powered by a plutonium reactor to which liquid hydrogen was injected, into which it was injected, and which was propelled to the, out the rear at a high speed, and propelled at a high trajectory, high speed. And, it's a question as to whether it was ever deployed. So you're probably familiar with that, are you not?
I have read reports of it. I've seen things on it on the internet during all my research, and I don't doubt that it existed.
Real. And in fact, that they did deploy it, even though they claim they have not. I have not.
Owen?
I don't believe they did deploy it. No, not as a strategic weapon or even a one-time weapon.
Mike, what's your background? You seem to know this pretty well, too.
I have, you know, I worked at the Marshall Space Flight Center.
Interesting.
But anyway, the, yeah, I'm an engineer.
You know what he's talking about there. So what do you think of his,
some measure, but what do you think of, you know, quasi-
What do you think of Owen's theory?
Plausible theory that Mr. Eichler has. It may be more quasi than plausible, but no. Crazy. No, I'm just kidding.
Owen, what do you think?
I didn't quite understand what he said.
Quasi plausible, or quasi plausible. Maybe more quasi than plausible. No. It sounds plausible to me.
Okay.
Well, your explanation for the, as that it was the MK2.
Yes. And do you believe it was the MK2?
I think so.
Did you ever have any experience with seeing a MK2?
Yes, I've touched them.
Oh.
Ah.
Interesting.
Yeah, and, you know, as you describe it, you know, that is identical to what I have seen.
Then can you, do you have...
I'm not an eyewitness, or, you know, I'd rather talk to an eyewitness than a Jehovah's Witness. No.
Jeez.
But,
do you have any insight on what the so-called markings were around the base?
I think. Well, they were geometric symbols.
Yes. But do you have any idea of what they were used for?
Well, you know, they, and as you said, they're codified. They're encrypted. So that, you know, certain different symbols, you know, they could, each individual symbol, geometric symbol, can represent a phrase. In most instances, and what they were specifically, I can't tell you. But you, I think you're right. It's these are the code book that you mentioned.
Ah,
you know, I've seen those.
Hmm.
But then there's probably something on the order of hundreds of those.
Oh boy, I would say so. I would even put one of my marks on it.
Wow, Mike.
Yeah. Interject.
Mike, thank you so much for that phone call. That was a nice little treat for you there, Owen.
Yes, it was.
Let's go back to the phone lines. Yeah, you never know what you're going to get here and who's listening and who's going to call in for us here. Wild card line number one, Alan out of Pennsylvania. Hey there, Alan. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hello. Yes, I tuned in on you very late, but it sounds familiar over 50 years ago here in Pennsylvania. I believe Kecksburg is out 30 near Greensburg. And I remember the issue at that time. And my boss at the time, I was young, I worked part-time, he was a pilot. And he saw the green object in the sky. He was very skeptical. He said, but it's the first time he said he'd ever seen a UFO that he believed in seeing. And he saw it, and I didn't, but I heard about it, and he talked very extensively about it. And later, I believe we were talking about Kecksburg, that's close to Greensburg, out Route 30, if I'm not mistaken, about 35 miles. And they did use, I believe, a Route 30 and 48 to bring some of that material back out of there. And some of the eyewitnesses that I heard the scuttlebutt about saw the conical object about 6 foot, and it was brown in color, a rust like, and it had markings on it, scratches, and so forth. Or what the party said there are hieroglyphics, and somebody described it then, and it was brought through here like anything. But my concern is somebody called in earlier or something. I can't understand. They've seen a gurney with a three-finger hand on it. Now, that to me doesn't fit in anywhere along the line unless there was other UFOs in the area that hit, and we don't know about it at that time because that doesn't sound like it had anything to do with the military or the aerospace age here. If you had a object with a hand with three fingers on it, that's what I'd say that ought to be looked at further. I think what we have now, we're uncovering a mystery that was done in aerodynamics at that point of time, because that's how they developed the Mercury 7 capsules, by the flat ceramic area that was aerodynamic. So the things that they're talking about, as I say, I see a rumor from, as I say, it's 50 years ago at that point, because I'm in my 70s now, and often wondered that. And even earlier today, I was thinking about that episode of, did anybody ever uncover what that was? It's near Greensburg. It was about 6 foot in length and a conical shape in rust brown. So this is answering my questions now, basically, but I thought things could inform me more. And this gentleman is from Pittsburgh. I wish off the air or something like that he'd give me a number that I could talk to him, because there's been other episodes that's happened in the sky around here that I'd like to pinpoint down, and not only that one that happened out there at Kecksburg.
And Alan, I hate to cut you off, but we need to end the show here. But definitely stay on the line so Gina can give you that number. I appreciate all the information he's talking about. If you guys want to address that quickly, that's fantastic. He was kind of running through some things, but I need to wrap up the show, and I want to make sure I thank you both for sharing your experiences. And before either of you go, I want you to just say real quickly if there's anything you want to last say before you do go.
Go, John.
Owen, go ahead. Owen, you go ahead first.
Okay. I'm very happy for having the opportunity to bring this information out, and the results that I would hope for did come through with the callers. The callers obviously listened very carefully. We've had callers that have verified information that I have come up with. I don't believe I heard a skeptic out there whatsoever on any of the things that I've brought up tonight. So I'm very happy and thankful for the audience and you.
Oh, thank you very much. We're glad that you came in and gave us an exclusive. And I guess where people can find this is actually, John, in your book. If you can just tell us real quick where we can find any more information, and if you have any last words.
Yeah. Well, last words-wise, I want to say, you know, the arcing, the symbols, the alien hand that Wright Patterson really have nothing to do with explaining what came down. I think Owen clearly, we identified what it was, when it lost its orbit, how it could stay in space, why it burned green, why it ended up looking burned to the brown or orange color. We've really explained everything aerodynamically and about the GE Mark II that matches up to Kecksburg. The full article on this is in my UFOs Over PA book, which I just re-edited and put out last week, along with 40 pages of other top cases we've had in Pennsylvania over the last year involving CE 3 and 4 cases. And in my new book, The Case for UFOs, I also put these pictures, the Bedders picture and this. And I just mention it because that book is more about proven cases. But my UFOs Over Pennsylvania definitely has this full article in it.
All right, and we hope to see you on Hangar 1 in the future, so I hope that works out for you. Both guys, thank you so much for Theory Number 5 with Kecksburg. That's Owen Eichler and also John Ventry. I want to thank again everyone that joined us, as well as Cindy Hagley earlier with a haunted house realtor. Wonderful lady, and it was kind for everybody to give us their time and their thoughts. And thank you for tuning in with me tonight. I appreciate that and hope you enjoyed the show as much as I did. If you did enjoy the show, please write in here to Coast to Coast AM and let us know that. From the 840 WHAS studios of iHeartMedia in Louisville, Kentucky, many thanks going out to Bill May, Kelly Carls, Kirk Wesley, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Dan Galanti, Tommy Danheiser, Sean de la Sueur, Ladisseur, that French guy. I gotta talk to him. Gina Salvati, Jeff Geray, Nathan Staten, Lisa Lyon, George Knapp, and of course, George Nori. Until we meet again, keep watching the night skies and continue with me to seek out the strange and uncover the unknown. For Coast to Coast AM, I'm Connie Willis.